You know, it's a very interesting thing about political leaders, particularly, but also about the leaders of corporations. They're much less visible to us, but they are playing an enormous part in the way in which the great ship of the world shifts one direction or another. For example, who is profiting from the endless wars, the ceaseless violence? Probably incredibly respectable corporations, but corporations are not abstractions, they are also people. Yeah? So we have to think very much about the people who apparently have massive influence in the way that our good ship, we call society, is moving. We have to think that they are somewhat at least produced by a kind of collective unconsciousness of what our world needs. So we need to play our part in healing ourselves so that our contribution is not to that unconsciousness, but to a greater consciousness, which is love. Which is love. And that is hugely demanding, because those other responses are so close to hand. They are the responses of the conditioned mind. So all the things that have talked about that we, you know, we might regard as behaviors that harm, despising, blaming, loathing, shunning, we could all feel that towards some of those leaders. Yeah. So I think perhaps it's better. But this is only speculation, it's not a recipe. To withdraw our attention sometimes and to see what we ourselves can influence more peacefully, particularly our own hearts. This asks a lot of us, because we are swept into the drama. We are so easily swept into the drama of conflict. So we ourselves are in conflict with those conflicting leading leaders, yeah, and those conflict nourishing leaders. It's a very, very big challenge of our time. And I find myself constantly returning to the writings of our 20th century teachers of nonviolence, very particularly Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King and also Gandhi. But in fact, all our spiritual teachers are teachers of nonviolent behavior. All of them, without exception, including Jesus, who had a strong, passionate nature, who could go in and be angry about something, but who did not respond with violence. So that takes me to the question that was asked yesterday. From the Good Samaritan story, this person suggests that I spoke perhaps too little about the person who was themselves robbed. This is an incredibly powerful archetype. We also belong in this archetype. This archetype also belongs to us. And I have thought about this a great deal overnight. It disrupted me in a very, very useful way. And I thought to myself about the significant moments in my own life when I have felt robbed. And I also had to think about the significant moments when I had robbed, because the needs of people as they move through a section of life are not always congruent. In some periods of people's deep friendships or deep connections, there will be a meeting of needs. And then sometimes the needs might separate, and one person will feel robbed because the other one, for example, may not want any longer to be intimate with that person. That's a kind of robbing. And yet, it may be entirely necessary. When somebody dies prematurely, not only are those who are left behind robbed of the presence of that person, and nothing matters more than presence. I hope I've made that tremendously clear. Nothing matters more than loving presence. Nothing matters more than loving presence. Nothing that matters more than loving presence. So it may also be that that person whose life ends prematurely, those left behind have been robbed of their presence, but that person has also been robbed of the years that they might have expected. This is a most profound, in the true meaning of that. It's a bottomless robbing. It's a bottomless robbing. And it made me think very much, I'll get to the later part of that question in a moment. It made me think very much about the Four Noble Truths, that in life there is suffering, but that we also need to understand what causes suffering, and that we also need to understand that because there is such inevitable suffering in our mortal existence, particularly to do with fragility and death, if we grasp this, then we would also grasp to cause as little unnecessary suffering as possible. That is the kind of primary logic of interbeing, isn't it? That once we've seen that in life there is inevitable suffering, when the people we love leave the body or die, as we might put it, we suffer, usually. We also suffer from disappointment. We suffer sometimes from starvation, not just starvation of the body, but also starvation of the heart. There are many things that we suffer from in this world. Enough already without causing suffering. So what we are invited to understand as conscious beings is where we have caused suffering and where we could cease to cause suffering and bring, to the best of our ability, some healing and some comfort and some joy. Let tidings of comfort and joy, comfort and joy. So these teachings, which sound complex, in fact are very, very simple. Let us just look at them a little bit logically. Let us accept that in life things are taken from us. Not only things, but experiences are taken from us and we suffer. In life, people are taken from us and we will be taken from people. We will be taken from people. And what will we leave behind? We will leave behind the memories of our presence, which will be both a comfort and a sorrow. It will be both a comfort and a sorrow. That is the nature of leaving. That the loving presence that you no longer have is both a comfort and a sorrow, isn't it? It's not that, I don't think that's a paradox. I think it's a truth, a simple truth. So let's go through these again. In life there is leaving, and in life there is also finding that we have to be without, which we might experience as a kind of robbery. Yeah? There is also the experience, which is extremely painful in a different way, of someone deliberately causing harm. Mm-hmm. There is an element in that, that someone would choose to cause harm or choose to go on causing harm, that it is another level of suffering altogether. I'm not comparing it to grief, but I think what arises in response to this is outrage as well as hurt. There's an outrage to it. Okay, so even within this, someone else has chosen to cause harm. Even that, we have to think about somewhat with some sophistication, because that person could be saving themselves, for example, by leaving a situation. Yeah? They could be saving themselves. They could be staying in the situation and causing harm. So there is not a single recipe here. So I need to make myself very, very clear. What we need to pay attention to here is our own self-healing, that we will cause as little deliberate harm, and certainly absolutely no harm where there's just cruelty or sadism in it. None of that. That is never, ever excusable, and it's barely forgivable. Yeah? Yeah? But sometimes we cause harm, though we would wish not to, by removing ourselves from a situation that no longer benefits us. Do you see the big difference? It's a very important difference, and it's sometimes hard to distinguish. This person asks, can you talk about practicing interbeing and interconnectedness when you are experiencing your world as the robbed? That is, stripped of dignity, kicked, frightened, and robbed of assets. Again, this is not a recipe. So we would need to look at this situation very individually, and we would also need to notice that there will be stages, and that if we are supporting ourselves in such a situation, or if we are supporting someone else in such a situation, we need to know that it is very much like grief, that the stages are not neat and linear. Unfortunately, they're far more disrupting than that. Mm. But what someone will almost always feel in the wake of their boundaries being so radically transgressed will be shock and outrage and utter confusion. So the very first task of self-healing will always be somehow to restore safety. That is the absolutely critical thing here. And those of you who have worked in this area, you are very welcome to correct me if I'm wrong, but somehow or another, when somebody has experienced this depth of stripping, then they need support to re-find safety. Their focus needs to be on themselves through this process. So interbeing does not require us constantly to think about the other person. It requires us to think about the harm we might be doing, but when we ourselves are traumatized or shocked or grieving or fragmented, we need to withdraw our attention and bring our attention to ourselves and re-find safety. I can't stress that to you enough. And when we are supporting other people, it would never be our duty to be talking about forgiveness or paying attention even necessarily to what that person has done, much more to restoring peace of mind, safety, inner stability and stillness within our own selves or within the person that we are supporting. This often means a physical separation, of course. Much later, I don't know how much later, because each one of us is different and we don't know what is being reactivated from the past. Yeah? We don't know. So at some point, much later, you're also going to think about peace of mind as being your goal. And you will ask the heart, the inner teacher, how will I find my way back to peace of mind? Peace of mind is your greatest friend here. Even if the friend visits so fleetingly, the door is hardly opened. Nevertheless, invite them in. Peace of mind. What does it mean for me today? Peace of mind. Does it mean simply that I can enjoy a cup of tea without obsessive thinking? Yeah? Does it mean that I can listen to a piece of music, or I could play Om Namah Shivaya and dance, as we will do at some point? Yeah? Am I inviting in those moments when I am not obsessing about what is being done, when I am alive in this present moment? Yeah? When I am alive in this present moment, because otherwise the person who has harmed has also robbed you of your future. And I will leave it there. If the robbing is in the past, please do not allow the robbing to continue into an unlimited future. Allow yourself also to have the gift of this present moment, in which all your beauty and power is re-arising. Om Shanti. I'll just find one more. Oh, that's a big one. Could somebody ask me a little question occasionally? Ah, okay. I'll say again, please be confident, we will get to your questions somehow or another in these spacious days ahead. When there is no time to reflect or practice restraint and you have to act quickly, how can you be sure to act with some degree of wisdom or of not harming? How can you be sure? You can't. You can't be sure of not harming. but you can learn to observe yourself. You can also build within yourself a kind of well of good wishes, a kind of determination that your actions will cause as little harm as possible in those times when there is time. In other words, you can cultivate habits of mind which are fairly fundamentally compassionate, which fairly fundamentally, this is fundamentalism 101, which fairly fundamentally wish the other well and wish yourself well also. Sometimes you will act in a way which comes from the wish for the highest good or the highest intention, and it's heard differently. That will happen. That will happen whether you've got no time or all the time in the world. Because each of us is defended. And if something creeps through our defences that we would not welcome, we will sometimes react very harshly and vigorously. Yeah? So that's then not a question of voluntary harming or involuntary harming. It's a question of getting to know life a bit better, getting to understand one another a bit better, getting to see where your defences are perhaps overly hard or crumbling in the right direction or reforming. Take it for granted, we all have our ego defences. Yeah. We are all unreasonably offended by some things. Where we are unreasonably, beyond reason, offended by something, this is a glorious moment to take to the inner teacher. Why am I so hurt by this? Why am I so outraged by this? I particularly mean in personal conduct where the other person didn't mean harm, but you felt harm. So where there's no time to reflect or practice restraint. Well, the Brahma Kumaris also have this wonderful saying, peace is just a thought away. Om Shanti means I am a being of peace. Om, the sacred sound of the divine, is the I am that also God apparently said to Moses in the burning bush. Is that correct? I am. Om, I am. I don't think God said it in English. Oh, isn't it a funny thing that everybody's name in the New Testament is English? Funny thing. We should all be reading it in Hebrew or Aramaic. All right. So we practice restraint best in the moments when we feel no restraint whatsoever. Can I leave you with that? When it's easy to practice restraint, there's not much merit in it. And may all the merit that arises from whatever we've learnt today benefit those who have no homes. Benefit those who have no place of safety. Benefit those who are at this very moment being harmed by heartlessness. Om Shanti.